The reading for this morning is from the book of Exodus, on the third chapter. Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian. He led his flock beyond the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There, an angel of the Lord appeared. He appeared to him in a flame out of fire, out of a bush. He looked, and the bush was blazing, yet it was not consumed. Then Moses said, "I must turn aside and look at this great sight and see why the bush is not burned up." When the Lord saw that he had turned aside to see, God called out to him from the bush, "Moses, Moses." And he said, "Here I am." Then he said, "Come no closer. Remove the sandals from your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground." He said further, "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. Then the Lord said, "I have observed the misery of my people who are in Egypt. I have heard their cry on account of their taskmasters. Indeed, I know their suffering. And I have come down to deliver them from the Egyptians and to bring them out of that land to a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey, to the country of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, and the Hivites, and the Jebusites. The cry of the Israelite has now come to me. I have also seen how the Egyptians oppress them. So come, I will send you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt." But Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to the Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" He said, "I will be with you, and this shall be the sign for you that it is I who send you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall worship God. You shall worship God on this mountain." But Moses said to God, "If I come to the Israelites and say to them, 'The God of your ancestors has sent me to you,' and they say, 'What is his name?' what shall I say to them?" And God said to Moses, "I am who I am." He said further, "Thus you shall say to the Israelites, 'I am has sent me to you.'" God also said to Moses, Thus you shall say to the Israelites, "The Lord, the God of your ancestors, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever, and this is my title for all generations." The word of the Lord.
Grace and peace to you from our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Amen. Looking at this Exodus lesson, it is rich with all kinds of entry places in how we can look at this lesson and ask ourselves one question: where is God in the story? And then the second question, which I always like to ask, is then where are we in the story? And so we can look at any story from those two perspectives. And so one of the things that typically happens, at least when I read this story, is I ask these questions of what and why, and one of those is, why did God take so long? They were in captivity 400 years, and now it's only this time that he's hearing their cries? So I'm one of those that asks that question still today. Why are you taking so long, God? I mean, it doesn't take me very long to listen to the national news and listen to the local news and read the internet or read the paper and begin to ask that question more and more these days. Where and when is God going to show up that will give us a world that is a lot safer and filled with a lot more peace? I mean, you turn on the TV and another series of killings, you know, happening in Oregon in a school. How many of those have you and I lived through in our lifetime? How many more do we need to live through? Or just the on the global scene where people just, there is no end, it seems like. When you think you've somehow made an inroad into securing some sense of safety, it erupts again, and something is, a piece of property, a city or whatever, is exchanged, and we're fighting again, and we're bombing again, and it just goes on and on and on. Where is God? When is God going to show up? Why doesn't God hear my cry of pain, you may say? Maybe you have something more closely to home, closer to home, things that are rumbling in your life that you are just saying, I have pain, I have suffering. Where is God? Why doesn't God come there? So if we look at this story just from what does it say about God, it kind of leaves me at least with a lot of skepticism, a little cynicism in fact, and some blaming and resentment. All those things begin to grow. Where is God when we need God? But the story informs us that God heard the cries of the people. That's what we heard in the story, and that God became aware of their misery and pain. So God now is aware of that, and in that awareness, God now acts. God has not forgotten. God still remembers these people. So the question in the story for me now turns to, so what does this story say about me? How often have we, I heard yesterday in a gathering of people, I think it even surprised the leaders of the group. I think there was almost, as my quick count in the room, was almost 200 people in the room. I think it overwhelmed those who planned the gathering. How often have we perhaps, maybe not forgotten, but instead put aside our own awareness of the pain and the misery that cries out around us in our world today? Have we buffered ourselves in such a way that the news becomes just something we can turn off or ignore while we make supper or eat and have conversations, and it's just background noise, and we really don't get into the stories, we don't really feel the pain because we have been isolated because of distance or because of other things? Is it that we become so buffered that we don't no longer consider those cries important anymore? We hear them so often that they just become another litany of pain that the world has, and we say, yeah, so what else is new? Whatever happened to St. Paul's words to the Christians who he knew in a city called Galatia, in a place called Galatia, I should say, these Christians? And then he says to them, bear one another's burdens. Have those burdens become so great or insignificant that we no longer care to even consider bearing them? Moses comes to the mountain, curious. It's interesting if you read it. He shows up. He sees the burning bush. It's not necessarily something he's rushing to, but he's kind of looking out to the side of his, you know, what is that going on there? And it's only when God notices that Moses has got an eye on the bush that he calls out to him. It seems that until Moses was curious enough, willing to ask the question to God, that he didn't somehow connect God's concern with his own concern. You see, in the story, we hear in the beginning of the story that Moses was out attending flocks. We forgot in the story that he actually ran away from Egypt. He took off because his safety was in jeopardy. What happened was that it wasn't just that he couldn't handle the Egyptian life when he started to recognize his own Hebrew status. But what happened was that he killed another Egyptian, and all of a sudden things were unraveling, and he needed to get out of town. And he left, and he ran away. He didn't want to take any responsibility for the pain of his own people that he discovered that he was part of. He ran away, and he tried to hide, if you will. Does that story sound familiar to you? I do that in many different ways. And so he's out attending flocks, all right, but he's out there in the safety of, if you will, the wilderness, away from the big city, away from all of that pain, the cries of the people. And he's attending sheep. Isn't it kind of nice to do something without any responsibility, or at least responsibility for people? You ever get at a point where maybe it's in your work life or maybe it's in your personal life where you just want to come home and veg out, as they say? You just don't want to be around other people. You don't want to hear any more complaint. I don't know, Barb, as a principal, if you ever experienced that, where you just said, I just want to go home and not have to listen to any more complaining from teachers or students. But I know Linda used to come home from teaching like that. She says, I'm just up to here. I don't want to hear anything. Kind of let me alone. Moses was alone with the sheep, willing to run away from the pain. And perhaps he was trying to run away from his own pain. Maybe it was working for a little bit, but all of a sudden this burning bush shows up in his life, and he was curious enough to ask, like I said, what's going on? And what he learned in that bush was that God was grieving. God grieved over the pain and the misery of the people who were still in Egypt in captivity. If this story says anything about God, it says that God understands pain, that God understands the depth and the emptiness and the struggle that pain produces. Luther once said to the prince who was deathly sick, he said he prayed for him, and he said, I just want to let you know, dear prince, that God grieves for you and with you. That was comforting words to me in my life when we lost our first daughter. When everyone else was trying to tell us that it was fine, okay, and all this other stuff. My grief was so great, and it was comforting to know that God grieved with me. God was willing in that pain of his own pain to act. And so he calls Moses out of the burning bush. He calls Moses to act on his behalf to release people from their pain. I have heard their cry, we are told, on account of their taskmasters. You see, in this story, this pain is of no fault of their own. Yesterday, in conversations with people of all different cultures in a room, I sat next to a woman who was retired, just recently retired. She was the assistant warden at Land O'Lakes Prison. She was African American. She was a powerful person. I didn't know her before this, and sat at a table, and we were asked to do stuff in pairs, and she and I turned to each other and had these conversations. And I began to hear from her as we were asked questions about our sense of, especially on those of us who were white in the room, our sense of supremacy in that as we've lived our life. And I don't like that term. It's still bothers me, but I'm beginning to understand it more. And one of the things that I said to her was, I grew up in a culture that blamed people when things didn't go right for them. Now maybe this sounds familiar to you. Things like, if they just only applied themselves more, if they just worked a little harder, at least that's from my culture, my experience, those were phrases that were drummed into me. That the reason people weren't succeeding, at least succeeding in the way that we had identified as success, the reason people weren't succeeding is because they weren't applying themselves enough. They weren't working harder. They weren't somehow doing it right. It's their fault. But in this story, we hear that their pain and their misery is of no fault of their own. It is being placed on them by their taskmasters. And what does God do? God sends Moses to the very political leader of his day, Pharaoh. Let us not forget that that's who Pharaoh was. He was the political leader of the day. And I'm sure that many people thought around Moses as he marched into town that it would be futile. Because Moses says it himself, who am I to be even asked to do such a thing? I am sure some people said, Moses, you have no right and no place to be here. You are only a Hebrew. You have no authority. You don't have any position. Listen to what follows. It's Moses' excuses. When God says, I want you to go and set my people free, Moses says, who am I? I'm not sure if I'm the right man for the job. All of a sudden, other excuses follow. And I have to admit, I don't know if you're like this, but I have a lot of excuses up my sleeves as well. It's not the right time. I'm not really skilled for this. I don't know if I can do this. So what keeps you from hearing the pain and the misery of others in this world? What keeps you distant and buffered from that pain? What keeps you from being curious about what God desires for the world? Our vision statement is that we are called to go out into the world where God is already working. How many of us have sat down and just actually thought for a moment, what is God doing in the world? What does God desire for the world? Well, let me see. John 3:16. For God so loved the world. If you want a nutshell desire of what God desires for this world, then repeat that over and over again. And it's not just for the world that I know, but for the world that God has created. And that goes way beyond my comfort zone. What keeps you from leading people out of their misery? Have you and I become so held captive by our thinking that we have to somehow achieve some level of success or we're not good enough? Is that it? We just can't take the first step because we just aren't good enough. Or have we somehow caused ourselves to run towards a goal that I heard yesterday is not even attainable, even though we think it is? We think that somehow success is right here, and then we just keep doing everything we can to get there. And the question is that really possible to even get there? And the world keeps saying, well, we just have to work harder, and we just keep saying we're not good enough. Are we caught up in a world that does not allow us to have pain or to share our problems? That's the world I grew up in. You shouldn't have pain, and you shouldn't even share your problems, and so we become mute. Must we always be so nice? Is this even our misery? That we are trapped in that kind of way of life, that we aren't even hearing God coming and saying, I've heard your cries? Because we have muted those cries of our own because it's not proper, it's not right. I urge each of us to look around us and see the pain as we live in fear between so many opposites. Right now, what's out there is this whole opposite of between whites and blacks, between Christians and Muslims. Pay attention to the gaps that are growing. These aren't just wishful type of thinking or just kind of dangerous stuff. These are things that people of all stripes, of all different places are saying, our whole country and the world is growing in these gaps that's dividing us more and more when it comes to healthcare or education or even wealth. We could, I guess, just crawl back into a hole or just kind of turn around and ignore it. Or we could listen to what we hear in the story today. God has not forgotten. God has not forgotten the cries of the pain and the misery in us and around us. That's at the heart of the Jesus story. We take it from Moses and a burning bush and a bunch of people held captive in Egypt to a whole world that's being held captive in a pain that needs to be addressed, and God says, I send my son. God has not forgotten. That's what you and I affirm every time we say, I believe, I believe. And if you want evidence of that, last Monday night, 7 confirmands got together to just speak their statements of faith at right here, at this place here. And the rest of the class and there are some of the mentors were able to offer some feedback. But each and every one of them, these are from 15-year-olds, said over and over again in different ways, God has not forgotten. Now, if a 15-year-old can say that with whatever else is going on in their life, then maybe I, as an older person, as one confirmation person said. And I said to him, you know, at 15, everybody's an older person. Maybe I need to remember that too, that God has not forgotten. God has not forgotten my cry, your cries, and the cries of this world. Our pain is known, our cries are heard, for God so loved the world. Moses was called to lead. This story is not just about God, it's actually about us. So the question is, how are you called? How am I called today? I grew up with that hymn, if you can preach like Paul, if you can sing like angels or whatever, but you know, even if you can't do all that, you are still called. We remembered our baptism today. In that baptism, you and I are all called to not just hear the cries of people around us, but to lead people into the freedom of God's love. So this week, I don't know what your schedule's like. A lot of people ask me, okay, what's on your schedule? What are you doing? So I don't know what your schedule's like, whether you're retired or working or going to school or whatever, but how are you called? How will you be called this week to lead people out of their pain? We are called, we just sang. We are called. How are you called?